This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is from the Blue Cliff Record, case 58. Zhao Zhou can't explain. The main case. A student once asked Master Zhao Zhou, "The ultimate path has no difficulties, just avoid picking and choosing. Isn't this a cliche for people of these times?" Zhao Zhou said, "Someone once asked me, but it's been 5 years and I still can't explain it." The verse. The Elephant King trumpets, the lion roars. Flavorless talk blocks off people's mouths. South, north, east, and west, the raven flies, the rabbit runs. So we've been having an introductory retreat this weekend, and so looking at the basic teachings of Buddhism, Buddha Dharma, and how those teachings are made manifest through practice. This koan involves Master Zhao Zhou, who was one of the great Chinese masters of Zen. He came to his teacher Nanquan when he was 18 and came to enlightenment at a very young age, and then studied with Nanquan for some 40 years, I think, until Nanquan died, and then he stayed on at that monastery for another 20 or some odd years, and then went on a pilgrimage when he was at that point around 80 or so, and then settled down in the town of Zhao Zhou, from which he took his name, and then taught for about another 20 years. So he lived a long, long time, and had a few disciples, and so I think of what a formidable teacher he must have been to have been in the Dharma for so long. And he, this passage is from a poem, the Faith Mind poem, which is probably the most well-known poem in the Zen tradition. It was written by the third ancestor, Sengsan. And Zhao Zhou in particular seemed to have a real affection for this poem. In the record of Master Zhao Zhou, there are numerous dozens of dialogues in which he recited different lines within this poem. And then there were, you know, dialogues with students on the basis of that. So it was clearly something that was very present within his teaching and would have been very familiar to his Sangha. And here this student comes to him quoting the opening lines, "The ultimate path or the great way has no difficulties, just avoid picking and choosing. When love and hate are both absent, the way is clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then just hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, then the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail." And then it goes on. And so I was thinking of this for a number of reasons. And there are a number of, there are three or maybe four koans, three I think for sure, in the Blue Cliff Record that involve Master Zhao Zhou and those opening lines, in which each case there's a dialogue that in which there's different a different dialogue based on these on this basic teaching. And I was thinking of this with regards to what's been happening for the last weeks, months, that came to some sort of, not, by no means an end, but to a point this week with the confirmation of Kavanaugh as the new Supreme Court Justice. And thinking of a nation divided and how much that's been spoken about in the press. And And I wonder, you know, is it really, is this evidence of a nation divided? Or have those divisions been here all along? You know, is this symptomatic of something that is happening right now or something that has been happening from the beginning? I thought of Abraham Lincoln's speech on a house divided. A house divided itself against itself cannot stand. He said, I don't expect the Union, this country, to be dissolved. I don't expect the house to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be divided. And of course, he was speaking about the slavery, the horror of slavery, and the coming apart of things at his time. But we can certainly bring those words appropriately, I think, to our time. And we can also look at those words as speaking about the origin of this division, which is within ourselves. And so this house is divided. I don't expect that it is going to just go away, be dissolved. I don't expect that it is going to fall, but I do expect that it will cease to be divided. So really that is a voicing of our great aspiration as practitioners, is that I vow to realize this house as undivided, so that I can then enter into the world, seeing the world in its true form as undivided, so that I can then see all divisions as a construction of mind and delusion. Master Dogen said, when one practice arises, practice that Dharma. You know, we should really appreciate the importance of that teaching, that when we go down, take our seat to do Zazen, you go without an agenda. We just go to sit, to do Zazen. And the whole universe is present. And then moment by moment, because we are awake, as each Dharma arises, the breath, a sensation, a thought, a memory, an emotion, silence, stillness, breeze across your face, that you practice that Dharma. And to really appreciate the importance of that, because that's the only reality there is, that moment, because we then develop the capacity to learn how to meet each moment as it arises. And we also get to see what happens when we don't do that. When Dharma arises and we don't practice it. What about that? And isn't where we are now a result of exactly this? All of the Dharmas that have arisen, all of the actions that have been taken that have not been attended to. This is Columbus Day weekend when we celebrate the person who discovered this country. Right? Thank you very much that it had been discovered for thousands of years before he arrived. That there were many, many peoples living in this country, occupying it, having developed their ways of life for many hundreds of years, and reading Columbus's own journals, that he was met with incredible kindness and generosity. And in gratitude, most of those people were slaughtered horrifically. Horrifically. So what kind of beginning is that? How many of us learned that in our classes of history? When something is not attended to, it does not go away. We see that within ourselves. We see that on every level. Every level. That's why the understanding and the study and the practice of karma is so essential. The Buddha said, without understanding karma, not only is there no enlightenment, in a certain sense, there can be no even pretense of practicing. Things do not go away because there is no away. They remain strong, they get stronger, but stronger in entangled ways, confused ways, hidden ways. And that hiddenness then comes out in ways that are not hidden at all. And so the Buddha's teaching, so radical, and seemingly so simple, is just avoid every extreme of picking and choosing, of denying, ignoring, rushing past, and of dwelling in, clinging, grasping, trying to fix, trying to preserve. That the only constant is change, impermanence. Nothing is fixed. And as we practice and we witness the inner flow, the inner change, the inner impermanence, and then we see it everywhere we look, and then we see our struggle against that change, struggle against impermanence. Sometimes the change is happening at all. We don't like that. Sometimes it's happening too slowly. Sometimes it's happening too fast. And so the Buddha said that is dukkha, that is suffering because of our denial and because of our grasping, trying to control. We live in these physical bodies, right? We are endowed with senses. Eyes that see, ears that hear, skin that touches. We perceive cold and hot. We perceive beauty and ugliness. We feel pain and pleasure. We witness kindness and cruelty. We experience moments of closeness and moments of great distance. We witness truth and deception. The Buddha's enlightenment really was a realization of how powerful we are as human beings, of how powerful human consciousness is. Look at our world. Look at our hand, our fingerprints, our footprints. Essentially, there's no place on the planet now where those footprints don't appear in one form or another. And yet we're not in control. There's so much we're not in control of. And from a deluded perspective, we just don't like that at all. Right? That just seems wrong, that we are not in control. And so in our efforts to control, we become fierce and aggressive and violent and oppressive. And of course, the we here is not equally distributed. And so how to be in this body, experiencing all of these ranges of human experience, having such influence, such power within ourselves, but not being in control. What are the important questions? What are the important matters? The Buddha framed so much of his teaching in terms of what was skillful and what is not skillful. In terms of essentially everything. Thought, words, and actions, perceptions, a sense of self, decisions, because he was always teaching from the point of view of the path of liberation. That was his, he made it very clear throughout all of his life that he was concerned principally with two things, the creation of suffering and the cessation of suffering. And all of his teachings were flowing directly out of and right back into those two grave concerns. And so how, in this physical body, living in this physical world, how do we come into intimate contact with what is both inner and outer without creating suffering? How do we know what is true and good and what is false and harmful without becoming self-righteous? How do we care deeply about things? Things being everything and everyone, without attachment to oneself or other or outcome. How do we care deeply about things and work towards the alleviation of all suffering without being attached to the outcome? From an ordinary perspective, that can just seem insane or woefully uninformed and unprepared. You will not be successful. Right? So much trust do we have in attachment, and so much, in a sense, misunderstanding. We don't understand what attachment is, so we don't understand what non-attachment is. But these are really the incredibly urgent challenges that the Buddha Dharma brings to us. Because if it just said, if it was just how do you be in intimate contact and not care, right? How do you not worry about what is true and what is not true? How do you not be concerned for others? We know that. We know how to be successful there, but we also know that that's not any kind of success that we should hope for. So what do we actually rely upon? The Buddha made it clear that we will all be subject, we are all subject to change, to sickness, old age, and mortality, that we will experience loss in this life continuously. Continuously, that the things that we want to go away will be there facing us. The things we don't want to go away, we will lose. That everyone here in 100 years will be gone. How do we experience this loss and care deeply about this life without creating suffering? I was reading an op-ed, of course, one of many, that was talking about these recent events with the judicial committee hearing. This is an event that deepens the national mood of turbulence. Our country is gripped by a climate of division and distrust, rivaled by a few other moments in the recent past. And then talking to scholars, they liken it to the Civil War, the period leading up to and in the midst of the Civil War, which we can only imagine what that was like. But these moments of such extreme polarization, a scholar said, that the government no longer functions the way it's intended to, the way it needs to. Senator Murkowski said, "I believe we're dealing with issues right now that are bigger than the nominee and how we ensure fairness and how our legislative and judicial branch can continue to be respected." She said, "We're at a place where we need to begin thinking about the credibility and integrity of our institutions." Begin thinking. Begin thinking. And I would say that the issue is much, much larger than that. Not just about the credibility and integrity of our institutions, as essential as those are, or even our democracy, which are inseparable from those institutions, but really it's a bigger moment. It's a moment of how do we want to be in this world? What kind of people do we want to be? And what does that even mean in a country of millions and millions of people, in a country of many different cultures, in a country where there is no America? What does that mean, right? What is your America? What is my America? And yet, here we are in this house that is divided. And so to really, from a Buddhist perspective, to trace this back to its root, which is you and me, and every you and me, the fundamental house that is divided, the fundamental division, the place where which is the source of our credibility and integrity as people, as persons, as individuals. The Buddha realized that to be alive is to be a profoundly ethical being, because everything we do has impact. That's the law of karma. Everything you do that arises from a desire that it has intention at its base creates impact, and that impact will be harmful, helpful, or neutral. There is no non-impact. There's no choice in the matter. And so that means our lives are fundamentally spiritually based, which means based in that impact, based in this fundamental question of credibility What does it mean to be credible as a person? Authentic? True? To have integrity? To be whole? Undivided? And so Zhaozhou often quoted this line, the great way has no difficulties, just avoid picking and choosing. How do we understand the great way is not difficult in the midst of today? Whenever we look, there seems to be so much difficulty. And so the Buddha, in the midst of his time and his turmoil, was pointing to and teaching about and directing his students towards the great way, the ultimate path. Because he had realized that the way we see things, because we are experiencing creatures, that's what we do. That's what life is. We experience everything through our senses and through our mind. And what we perceive in our mind gives rise to thoughts and ideas, which we formulate into views of the world and ourself, which become beliefs and ideologies. And they may be true or they may not be true. And individuals and groups of people have tenaciously grasped onto views that fall on both sides of that. And so the Buddha said the only way to a path of liberation, the only way to truly know peace, is to actually encounter peace itself. And so the only way to practice peace is to be peace in your mind and in your body and in your words and actions and in your thoughts. The only way to bring forth compassion is to be compassion. You know, when I was studying music, as I started when I was a child, and, you know, I played music. That was always the way I thought of it. I played music. It was important to me, but I played music. But then I decided to make it a career, and so I went to school, and I was working towards a career. So in my mind, there was this thought that now I am becoming a musician, right? Because now I'm going down a sort of professional track. And so I kept thinking, at what point am I a musician? Like, when does that actually happen? Right? Is it when I graduate? Is it when I start performing? Is it when I get reviewed? Is it when I feel like I'm one? Like, where does that come from? Doesn't matter. The thing itself is the thing itself. And so we practice not to prepare ourselves for the day when we will be that house undivided. We practice today not dividing. We practice today realizing the division was never here. It's the power of our minds and our perceptions and our beliefs and ideas that create such profound sense of division that we make it manifest as an appearance in the world. But even those appearances of divisions themselves are not divided. A wall. We can build a wall around the whole earth and make it stretch miles into the sky so no one can get over that wall. The wall itself doesn't know division. It's just bricks and mortar. Where is the division? There was a student studying with Zhaozhou, and Zhaozhou gave him this line, the great way is not difficult, just avoid picking and choosing. And his student worked on it as a koan, and then finally broke through. And Zhaozhou said, how do you understand it? And the student said, animal, animal. Dog, dog. What is he pointing to? When there is no division in the mind, when there's only the great way, and there is no apart, there is no away, how does that manifest? The author of the faith mind, Sengsan, came to his teacher, Huika. This is very early in the tradition of Zen. And he had leprosy. He was very, very ill. And he came to Huika and said, I am diseased. I beg you, please cleanse me of my sin. So he believed that in some way his leprosy was a result of past karmic actions that was bearing fruit by virtue of his illness. And Huika said, bring me your sin and I will cleanse you of it. And so Sengsan went into his meditation and searched and searched and came back to his teacher and says, I cannot get at it. And Huika said, there, I've cleansed you of it. And so this student quotes this line and says, isn't this a cliche for people of these times? And what a good question to ask this student, to ask Jiazhou, given that this teaching was being uttered all the time, right? Just think about it. How many times were people hearing this, right? It's like in Master Linji's monastery, people were hearing shouts all the time. Everybody was shouting, right? And so they could have come to Master Linji and said, this shouting, isn't it a cliche? Like, isn't it worn out? Does it have any meaning anymore? What a great question. Your practice, isn't that a cliche? Has it become worn out? Is there any life in it still? Caring, believing that we deserve, all people, all beings deserve to have a fair shot. Isn't that a cliche? And so Zen talks about dead words, words that die, that have no life, and live words. Words that can illuminate, that can shift, that break your heart open and reveal your mind. Isn't this a cliche? And Jiazhou says, someone once asked me that, but it's been 5 years and I still can't explain it. Now remember, this is a very deeply developed being. He's been teaching for many, many decades. He teaches this very teaching. Why does he say, I can't explain it? And so, those of you, for all of us, when we first entered this monastery, what happened? Hopefully somebody said, hi, welcome. No, come in the Buddha hall and let me show you something. Take your seat, fold your legs. Hold your hands thus. Take your mind and examine it. This is the inheritance that you have just received. And then you were given a seat in this hall of Buddhas, this hall of awakening. Now, having received this Buddha Dharma, find out for yourself. You, find out for yourself. Because there is no other way. In the commentary of the poem, it says, making offerings of the Buddha to the Buddha is not a matter of a lot of incense. If you can pierce through and escape, then letting go or holding on, you see, rest wholly within yourself. Wholly within yourself. It's hard to fully trust that. I think it takes years, actually. We can know it soon enough, but to really understand that, I believe, takes years and years of training. Know for yourself that letting go or holding on rests with yourself. Now, having said that, circumstances can assist you in that or not. They can work to support you, encourage you in that, or they can work to discourage you from that. And so in a certain sense, the work of the Bodhisattva is to try not, when we talk about saving all sentient beings, that's very directly about alleviating suffering in every and any way possible. Whatever size it is, whatever shape it takes. And to do that for oneself and for others, because how else will we learn if we don't relieve our own suffering? If we don't cease to be this house divided, how will we turn towards a world divided and be able to not just become another part of that division? But because we cannot let go for another, I cannot let go of your attachment. I cannot have faith for you. My having faith, if there's a seed of faith in you, can rouse that faith. That's what we do for each other. In the same way that my blindness, if there's blindness in you, can encourage that blindness. But as bodhisattvas, really what we're in the business of doing is trying to, in every way possible, create circumstances that are conducive to letting go, to not dividing the house, to seeing clearly, to bringing forth compassion, to instilling faith, to deepening our trust. And so when we think about it that way, then obviously it becomes an imperative to examine, well, are we doing that here? Are we doing that here? Wherever here we find ourselves. Make a single distinction and heaven and earth are split infinitely apart. Heaven and earth have never been apart. So how can a single distinction, a single thought of this and that, right and wrong, self and other, split apart what has never been divided? That's the power of our mind. To make so real, so compelling, so solid a sense of something that is not. And within that separation, that distance, our sense of self is born. And within that sense of self is you and me, this side and that side. And so if you wish to see the truth, hold no opinions for or against anything. Not doesn't mean to walk around in blankness. You know, I've met people over the years, those are young practitioners, who, when I ask them a question, it's like, I have no opinion. I only know equanimity. Right? Anything is okay with me. And it's like, really? Really? I don't think so. That gets ruptured in a moment, right? We have to pierce through and see that letting go or holding on rests within oneself. And that because we have not attended things, we do not attend to things always as we must. And then when we don't, what happens? They get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And more intractable and more complicated. I mean, we can see this on every level. That's really the basis of the precepts, the moral teachings, right? So much of what the precepts are talking about is not just that moment of action. When we turn against ourselves, we turn against another, we create a hell realm, we build a fire that starts licking at the foundations of the house. But it's everything that leads up to that. all of the preparation, all of the mental and verbal and physical preparation, all of the creating of conditions that make that action ripe, that's what we're pouring our energies into. That's what we're deciding is important. That's what we're making our life about. Let me respectfully remind you, time, life, and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by and opportunities are lost. Is this what we want to be devoting our attentions to? I mean, you know, watching these hearings and listening to all of it, on the one hand is the heroism and the courage and the change, the revolution that is underway and that is not over, not by a long shot. And all of that arising out of violence and exploitation and disregard and disrespect and silencing and not listening and not caring. And so we have this moment, and that's what we must devote all of our attentions to. Really? Is that as good as we are? But we must, because it has not been attended to. And even though it went the way it did, which everybody has their own opinion about, what does it show us about not just our country, but ourselves? What does it show us about delusion and enlightenment? What does it show us about the teachings of Buddha Dharma? Zhao Zhou says, someone once asked me, but it's been 5 years and I can't explain it. The commentary says, does Zhao Zhou answer the student from inside or outside the nest? Cliché, the translation of cliché here means nest, a burrow, a place where you dig down and hide yourself. And so he's asking a really nice question. Did he answer from inside or outside of the nest? That's why in the poem it says, the elephant king trumpets, the lion roars. This is Zhao Zhou, his lion's roar, bringing forth the Dharma. And then it says, flavorless talk blocks off people's mouths. Flavorless here doesn't mean bland. It means it has no taste. What does that mean? It blocks off people's mouths. It stops. That's its purpose, is to stop. To startle. To disassemble. Flavorless talk shakes the rafters. Right? Things begin to break at the seams so that we can see. Zhao Zhou was speaking from within the Great Way. He was manifesting. Just avoid picking and choosing. In dynamic relatedness, teaching, trying to create the conditions that were ripe in that very moment with those alive words to help this student see. Never divided. The old master Lungchen Rabjam said, the freedom of everything, abiding in a supreme state of equalness, of equality, is unacceptable to those involved in cause and effect, effort and achievement. Very interesting. The truth, the reality is unacceptable. When we're wedded to, attached to, the house is divided. When we're wedded to, it's between you and me. And I'm winning. When we're attached, when we are divided ourselves, then to hear that teaching, is very startling, can be very disturbing. But then he goes on to say, but in the most sublime approach, it makes perfect sense as the ultimate meaning of unwavering equality. And that's true, that these teachings, which can seem so opaque, so dense, so there is no place to enter here, make perfect sense when we see things in their true state. Now we know. And then when we look at delusion, we understand because we ourselves are in the midst of and permeated with delusion, but now we know. In this place where Zhaozhou is speaking, there is no cliche. That's why in the commentary it says, we each must realize that this great matter isn't in the words and phrases. It's in you yourself. It's in me, myself. If there's a person who can pierce the bone all the way to the marrow, whose faith is deep and thoroughgoing, sufficient to carry us along the way, then you're like a dragon in the water and like a tiger in the mountains. In other words, we realize our basic nature and find our freedom there. This is the greatest challenge, you know, to sit down and stop and turn in. For those of us, when we begin sitting, that's very challenging, right? It is. It is a revolution. And we will encounter many challenges along the way. But to get up and to step forward is a much greater challenge. To turn towards, even having realized there is no division, to turn towards our time, our place, and see all of the many fissures, the seams, to hear all the voices, to take in the whole, and care about the whole is the great challenge. That's why, you know, one day Avalokiteshvara, her head blew open. It was that kind of a day. The great Bodhisattva compassion was so overwhelmed in the midst of her vow, her head blew apart. But it's not over, right? What happens when your head blows apart? What happens in the moment when you lose your faith? What happens in the moment when you feel convinced, I cannot? You breathe. That's your wisdom. You breathe. You take another step. That's your wisdom, right? You look up. That's your wisdom. You look in. That's your wisdom. That's what happens. That's what happened to her. So don't be too concerned about heads blowing apart. It's part of the deal. And what does a life look like? Living in this realization. There's a passage from the Vimalakirti Sutra. The great lay Adept said to have lived at the time of the Buddha. Non-historical, not important. He's described this way. He engaged in all sorts of businesses, but he had no fundamental interest in profit or possessions. To train living beings, he would appear at crossroads and on street corners, and to protect them, he participated in government. To turn people, to develop children, he went to schools. To establish drunkards in correct mindfulness, he went to cabarets. He was honored as a businessman among businessmen because he demonstrated the priority of the Dharma. He was honored as the landlord among landlords because he renounced the aggressiveness of ownership. He was honored as the warrior among warriors because he cultivated endurance, determination, and patience. He was honored as the aristocrat among aristocrats because he suppressed pride, vanity, and arrogance. Honored as the official among officials because he regulated the functions of government according to the Dharma, according to what is wise and true and peaceful. He was honored as the prince of princes because he reversed their attachment to royal pleasures and sovereign power. He entered into all those places, high positions, low positions. And he saw all of those positions, all of those places, an opportunity to live his vow. And so he's a model, a teacher for us. How do we do that? How can we do that? And so to follow a path with heart, you know, as I said the other day, can sound wonderful. When we read the Dharma, we can be inspired. And hopefully we are. That's an important function of encountering the Dharma, is to be inspired. That means there's something alive within us. And we should also know that we will encounter everything that we're trying to get away from. That if we're trying to get away from conflict, we will find conflict. As we try to get away from arrogance, we will encounter arrogance. As we try to get away from the source of those conflicts, we will encounter the source of those conflicts. It must be so. But we encounter them with teachings and practice and friends in which to engage in this path of the heart. And so I encourage all of us to continue on this path. Those of you who are here and exploring. This weekend was nice because it was just interesting because quite a number of you have been practicing for a while, as well as some of you really just starting. It's great to have that kind of spread. But the important thing is to continue on a path that is true and that has heart. The world needs this. We need this. We need you. Each of us is needed. I'll end with a poem. Life and death are of great importance, and time never returns. Life and death have never appeared, and the field of today is open. There is a fire burning, do you see? Develop your strength, don't look away. Walk straight ahead, let it scorch you all the way down. Now, emerge and mingle within the scars, where spring's wildflowers are already stirring. May our lives go well.
Thanks so much for listening. Please join us on October 18th to 21st at Zen Mountain Monastery for A Sudden Flash of Spaciousness, an introduction to mind training with Buddhist teacher and writer Judy Leaf. For details or to find out more about ZMM programs, visit our website at zmm.org.